it does get very physical, and it's a lot of energy to convey everything with just your voice instead of using your body and stuff. So it can be taxing, you know, physically taxing that way.
That was Jodi Benson. Do we remember her? I do. She was the voice of Ariel in The Little Mermaid, which is celebrating its 30th anniversary.
Under the sea.
That's right. I'm Neil Rosen, joined as always by Bill Bregoli.
I think a lot of people had little cartoon crushes on Ariel.
And Bill McKay.
Neil was Jessica Rabbit.
I was drawn to her.
You know, that was the movie that began the Disney revival of animation. They brought in Alan Menken and Howard Ashman, the late Howard Ashman. And before that, they were turning out just kind of crappy stuff. And that's when, what was that studio head guy that went into Disney at that particular
Jeffrey
point?
Katzenberg?
Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Yeah, Jeffrey Katzenberg and another guy, too. And
Or Eisenberg, we're thinking. Michael Eisner.
Michael Eisner, I'm sorry. Michael Eisner. Yeah, and they started doing this great stuff. They did Lion King and Beauty and the Beast and all these tremendous films. And but The Little Mermaid was the first, and it just might be my favorite movie. I mean, when...
ever of all time?
Of the Disney...
I like Network. Raging Bull I thought was good. You're right.
Of the Disney animated films, Little Mermaid just touches me. Having a daughter, maybe, when the King Triton gives her legs so she could be with the love of her life. I mean,
wait a minute. Do we have this right? It's been 30 years?
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow. It just seems like my daughter liked it, but I guess it had been around for 12 years when she started watching it.
Probably saw it on a video cassette.
Yeah.
Well,
remember those, Granddad?
Yeah.
Well, I loved the movie. I still love the movie. So it's coming out on...
Digital... it's all digitally remastered on a
4K?
Special, yeah. Well, I don't know how many Ks, but it's... It's yeah, it comes out today.
Case.
Also, this week is Ralph Breaks the Internet, and Jodi Benson got to revoice Ariel with all the print in the scene with all the princesses.
That's right. Right. Yeah.
Everybody
so
back.
That's why she was in town yesterday talking about everything.
You know, Ralph Breaks the Internet is nominated for an Oscar. It won't happen, but it really is one of the funniest movies. It's certainly better than Incredibles 2, which was the big surprise. We talked last week and the week before about how.
The Spider-Verse movie.
The Spider-Verse thing has probably got it locked, but Ralph Breaks the Internet is really funny.
Yeah, and John C. Reilly, he's done such great stuff. You know?
Did that get nominated?
Yes, it did.
Yeah,
it did.
That's what I just said.
It's up to.
Yeah, all right. Well, it has no shot. I mean, that would be that would be quite the shocker. But did you love The Little Mermaid? I loved The Little Mermaid. I mean, the music was great, as you guys were singing Under the Sea before. Part of Your World is a great song.
Sure.
I mean, yes, Sebastian the Crab doing Under the Sea. The whole thing is just great, you know?
I think I stole a poster for it.
Sounds like you liked it a little better than we did.
Pat Carroll in the movie.
Yeah.
Doing the woman who tricks Ariel by taking her voice. And away, I remember it well. I've seen it many, many times.
Who was the gaffer in Best Boy? You're really...
Well, it was all drawn. I don't think they had a gaffer.
They drew a gaffer.
But it was also traditional 2D animation, not
right.
Any of this
computer
animation,
yes.
CGI stuff that they do so much of these days. So anyway. Anyway, so if you haven't seen it, you want to see it again, see it with your kids. What a great movie. And see Ralph Breaks the Internet. Did you love that one?
It's very funny.
Yeah.
It's subversive.
You like it
and,
as much as...
I think it's better than the first one, actually.
Wreck-It Ralph.
It's the Godfather 2 of Ralph Breaks the Internet.
That's funny. Well, moving on. Let's talk about Albert Finney for a little bit. The late Albert Finney... Just pause for 1 second. The late Albert Finney... passed away, and was it
how many times have we? I'm going to say that definitely for Aaron Brockovich. Did you do the Miller's Crossing junket? You know, he was replaced like a day before that started shooting. Yeah. Somebody famous dropped out at the last minute, and he learned it all and got to the set and they shot. A friend of a friend of mine who was on the movie said. He sort of became like the king of New Orleans. They shot it down in Louisiana, and he was a real movie star but was really nice to everybody, and that they would go to the French Quarter and go to jazz clubs and stuff while it was shooting, and that he was just a gentleman and a real movie star, kind of a principal guy.
I remember him telling stories during the Aaron Brockovich junket, during a roundtable, and he's telling stories about doing Tom Jones and all the English actors he worked with.
My wife and I
been around.
We're talking about the fact that, I mean, in Tom, he was a really good-looking guy, and by the time he got his fame in movies, Tom Jones, he kind of aged really kind of quickly after that, and you know, he didn't have like a 30-year career of being.
He got pudgy. He got like, you know, the spare tire, and he wasn't the sexy,
cool guy. He
didn't have like
20 years of like the, you know, handsome guy. You know, he had like a few years of the handsome guy, and then he went into the middle-aged, like you said, pouchy tire.
What was the name of that great Audrey Hepburn movie where they're driving around Europe and it's told out of order?
Oh yeah,
That was great. Shoot the Moon. If you can, if anyone listening to this can stream it, I should have looked it up. I don't know if it's currently available anywhere, but he and Diane Keaton are married. She has an affair with Peter Weller, and he just goes off the Finney, just goes off the rails. Man, that is a great. I think. I'm almost positive Alan Parker directed that, and what a great film that is. So those two, well, Two for the Road was the one I was trying to think of, and I think Stanley Kramer directed that. So Two for the Road, just tremendous with Audrey
People
Hepburn.
People love Two for the Road.
And what's great about it's it is it's about a couple, but it jumps around in time, so they're happy, and then they're sad, and then they're breaking up, and then they're together, and it's all told out of order, which makes it
he
even
more
heartbreaking.
He was in a Bond film.
He was in a Bond film?
Yes.
No.
I want to make a bet.
Albert Finney?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, he was in Skyfall.
Sure was.
He was?
He was the gamekeeper in the end of the
right,
movie.
Right, right. I forgot about
family's
that.
Family's gamekeeper.
Yeah, still in that shitty shack.
Yeah.
Just waiting for you to come back.
He was in Annie. He played Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah.
He
was a real throwback to the old days.
The old guys. They're all going, man. They're all...
Yeah, Connery's on his last legs.
Was he part of that group with the Richard Harris, Richard Burton?
Around the same time.
They were the same time. I don't know if they palled around.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think they did.
A lot of those guys were friends because they were also out of the old Vic, and they were like in the theater scene in London, and I'm not sure that Finney was. I don't know that he wasn't, but I just think that they... He was more of the guy who was a film actor almost from the beginning, I think. And I think lived for a long period here in the United States. So he sort of missed out on chumming around with those guys, I think. You never hear about he and Olivier like closing down a bar somewhere. We digress. Because we love to. This week's digression
all
is
right,
brought to
so,
you by LaCroix.
So, Bill Brigoli, you saw a Netflix series.
That's me.
Tell me about this series.
Series about girls on Netflix. Once
you're
again,
all over.
I was the guy who recommended Glow, remember? And now,
you also saw that you recommended that series about the kid who was
Sex Education.
That's right.
So when I read that there's a series about Catholic schoolgirls in Northern Ireland, I'm going, yeah, I'm binge watching this, and I watched all six episodes.
He watched it in slow-mo.
Back to back. It's called
What's
Derry
it called?
Girls. It takes, as I said, takes place in Northern
but
Ireland.
Gary, like G-E-R-R-Y, right?
D-E-R-R-Y.
Oh, D-E-R-R-Y, sorry.
Because the city was once called Londonderry. And in the very beginning, in the very first episode, you see some youths spray painting out the London so that you know you're in the 90s. And then there were British soldiers walking around, and the schoolgirls are on a bus. The bus is stopped by a soldier who's checking everybody out, carrying a loaded rifle. And one of the girls says to the others, "Suppose I tell the soldier there's an incendiary device inside my knickers." And that's the flavor of this whole series.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So it's kind of a dark humor kind of
dark,
a thing?
Dark humor. Very broad humor.
Do we know anybody in it?
You don't know anybody, but...
Even one of the older people that's like...
No, not really. And I've got to warn you, the accents are so thick.
You need the
sometimes
closed
you need
captions.
Yeah. But it's very sweet. You can tell the girls apart. After an episode or so, that very biting humor. There's a nun character in it who's incredibly funny.
I can't believe that they haven't used your quote. You can tell the girls apart after an episode.
Yeah, it takes a little while.
Totally sitting
again,
around
the
talking movies.
Bad are the accents?
And two of the girls look kind of similar. That was the problem.
How bad are the accents in terms of?
I'm talking thick. I mean, I go to an Irish bar all the time, and I'm pretty good with Irish accents. But the guys at this Irish bar tell me that the Northern Irish accents, they can't even understand.
Really?
Yeah. Because that they had a waitress come in from Northern Ireland, and they were asking each other, what'd she say? It was pretty funny. But definitely check the series out. It's very sweet, and it's the kind of show that was. It was produced by Channel 4 in England, and
right.
They gave it a second season after the first episode of the first season aired.
And they're a half an hour each?
Half an hour, a little less, actually, like 26 minutes apiece.
And so, you recommend this?
I absolutely do, yeah. But again, you might want to turn on your subtitles.
I can't tell you how often Mrs. McCuddy and I do that, not because we can't hear it, because we can turn it up as loud as we want. It's because the accents are just...
Well, I have a problem with the Ritchie films. With the
Guy Ritchie films, like
Lock, Stock, and Smoking Barrels. Yeah, I mean, I find it very hard to understand what they're talking about, which is a very difficult way to enjoy or watch a movie.
Even when he reads it and knows what it says.
Well, you know, you can't always, a lot of times we see these things on links and you can't put the subtitles on. There are no subtitles.
Remember there was a Guy Ritchie film with Brad Pitt, was that Snatch?
Snatch, yeah.
And he mumbled, his character mumbled and had an accent. You couldn't understand a word he said.
And then there was the old guy with the glasses who was trying to screw him all over, and he was completely incomprehensible.
Well, when you watch, you know, a lot of the studios gear their movies to international audiences that really aren't interested in reading subtitles, so that's why you have such limited plot on all these action movies or superhero movies. And
but the English don't go in for that shit, that shite. They like a story and they lay it on thick.
I like a story. That's what I'm all about, is a story. You know what I mean? So you recommend this?
Absolutely.
For the third time, yes.
Yes,
and I think I will watch it as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think your wife will like it too.
The name of it again is?
It's called Derry Girls.
Derry Girls.
It first came on Netflix in the end of December, but it's still around, so definitely catch it.
Jimmy Kimmel had a very funny line last night and regarding the following. First, this is true that the Oscars are taking four of the categories away from the broadcast. So when you watch the Oscars next Sunday, such categories as editing,
cinematography.
Costume design, I believe.
What's weird about editing is that I didn't realize this, but that's often a precursor to what's going to win Best Picture. Mm. Like 9 out of 10 times, the one that wins Best Picture. And so
best
that's one of those things earlier in the evening.
Best live action short is being cut. Oh, now why even watch the show?
I mean, they're going to...
So Jimmy Kimmel's line was, so they're cutting editing. They're going to do them during... By the way, they're going to do them during
right,
the commercial
right.
break.
It's not
he goes, so that's kind of cool. You know, like editors understand being cut. You know, so I thought that was pretty funny.
It is funny. You know, everybody on social media has been outraged over this. They point out that in the 70s, when there was no host, the show ran 2 hours and 38 minutes or something like that. And I think there were fewer commercials back then. And that was on NBC. But I have to tell you, I'm going to take the other side of this, which is I wouldn't mind a shorter show, A. I'm not going to miss those. I mean, as I said, the editing sometimes tells us something, but when they come back from those commercials, they're gonna say who won that Oscar, obviously.
Yeah.
And I just want to make this point. I don't want this show to go to streaming. I don't want it to go to cable. I want it to be on ABC for the rest of my life.
They have it. Why wouldn't it be?
It's if the numbers keep dwindling. They've talked the last couple of years about getting it off of ABC and getting it onto some streaming platform.
Okay, I'll tell you why I don't think that's going to happen. First of all...
Well, I don't want it to happen, so I'm just saying whether...
Golden Globes, which is not as prestigious as the Oscars, are on NBC, and I don't hear any talk about them taking that off of NBC. Do you?
No, but the... But
then there's the Tony Awards... Which nobody other than, you know...
Well, the Tony Awards won't be on national on network television.
Well, what they did to the
longer.
Tony Awards is... I don't know if they're still doing this, but on public television, they have like a... It's 2 hours.
An hour before.
Yeah, and they do all the lesser, not the big name categories, right. And they do all the technical stuff. And then it switches to CBS for 2 hours from 9 to 11 o'clock.
Well, that some hybrid like that could happen to ABC. It really could.
But, you know, if you're watching the Oscars, I mean, how many people really do want to see what's going to win best live action short? I mean, I don't want to deny the people that made those particular films their moment in the spotlight.
Well, you kind of do.
Well, but I'm just saying, who's really interested in that? I mean, we're all critics. We see everything. We haven't seen the live action shorts. You know what I mean?
Right. So, no, I think you're right. I mean, everyone's been yelling this week about it. You can't do this. And I just think whatever makes the show move a little more smoothly, what most people are saying is that, do they really think taking these four categories out is going to boost viewership? And I think that's a good point. Nothing's going to really boost
it. What's that thing that they do during the Oscars where they go
in memoriam
in a previous, in an earlier ceremony?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
The governors,
they do some technical stuff.
2 weeks earlier, they do a
technical. So why don't they just throw those categories into that as opposed to doing them?
Well, I think what they want to do is, so the cinematographers, the editors, and the two other categories, those people will be there. I'm sure during the middle of the commercial, they'll be told they won, and then the directors will know where they're seated. And when we come back, they'll probably say who they are, and they'll stand up, and we'll get a view of those people.
Well, do they get to make a speech?
No speech. No, the whole point is to cut it out.
No, I'm saying during the commercials. The commercials run about 3 to 4 minutes.
No, I don't think they'll give them a speech.
So they just get to stand up and take a bow?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Then, because I was wondering, like, if they did a speech and it went long and you come back from commercial and you're still on stage, that could be problematic.
Right.
But okay, so that's what they're going to do. Well, all right, we'll see what happens. There's still no host. Maybe that's
official now.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's a good thing. You know, maybe that's a good thing. I'm going to plug our show again. And before we move on to Bill McCuddy's and Bill Bregoli, we're going to talk about another Netflix movie. We taped a talking, used to be Talking Pictures, now it's Talking Movies. It's its own half an hour show, and it's on CUNY TV. And it'll be on Friday night the Oscar weekend, which is next weekend, and it'll be on Friday night at 9:30, and then it'll repeat all throughout the weekend. And I know on Spectrum it's on channel 75. I'm not sure what the Verizon number is. Check your listings. But it's me and Lisa Rossman and Bill McCuddy and Rafer Guzman.
It's a crackerjack half hour.
Yeah, it's a great ad. It's fun, and you'll enjoy it. And we yell and scream like we do on Talking Pictures, and you'll enjoy that. So Bill McCuddy and Bill Bregoli saw High Flying Birds, a Netflix movie. Seems like there's always
It's singular. It's High Flying Bird.
Oh, Bird. Okay.
And this is Steven Soderbergh, who shot the whole thing on
an iPhone.
Yeah. Well, an iPhone. I watched actually some of the behind the scenes stuff because I know Kyle MacLachlan has he's one of the owners, and we'll talk about the plot in a second. But right. I saw a picture of Soderbergh sitting in a wheelchair and somebody pushing him to do a dolly shot. And I thought, oh, the old camera phone in the wheelchair dolly shot thing. That's how most of Ironside was shot. But this is an interesting little film that looks tremendous. I mean, for having been shot on an iPhone, it really looks
even
amazing.
Not having been shot on an iPhone.
Yeah, you really didn't have to say that.
Right.
But it's got some great veteran actors. I mentioned Kyle MacLachlan, Bill Duke is in it. And it stars a guy named Andre Holland, who's playing an agent to a couple of basketball stars during a lockout. And the players are disagreeing with the owners.
The owners
on how much money they should get. They're dealing with the TV networks. And in the middle of all of this, they get an idea to, and I'm not going to give too much of it away, to pull a social media kind of stunt that forces the players and the teams back to the table. It's kind of like Jerry Maguire and a kind of sort of behind the scenes like Draft Day, that thing. I know you like that movie with
Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
Very.
If you like that, you'll really like this movie. It has a lot of the minutiae of what goes on behind the scenes. It's to be admired. It's only 90 minutes long, but it's definitely to be admired for the technical look and feel of the thing. I have no idea what it cost, but it couldn't have been that expensive. It's got all these great New York sets and scenes where they obviously just shot like on a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
When there was nobody around.
Right.
And
they're all in empty restaurants all the time.
Yeah, they're in empty restaurants. One of them is the Standard. You'll recognize the Boom Boom Room from the Standard Hotel.
Yeah.
And you'll recognize a lot of the places in New York. But it's a little sluggish in a couple of places. Yeah. But I would say overall, it's an interesting, well-told movie.
Yeah, very talky.
Yeah.
Very talky. And don't forget, they cut to real basketball players talking about their days as rookies.
Correct. Yeah, that's like in Reds, there's like cutaways moments where people are interviewed about being drafted and about being young and expecting one thing when you get into it.
This is NBA draft?
Right.
NBA draft, not college draft. Okay.
Well, they're drafted out of college, so that's when they're talking about.
Yeah, but I think they're drafting these players into college now, too. No,
no, they get recruited into college.
Recruited, that's the word. Yeah. All right, so we'll play your game, Bill McCuddy. Have you convinced me to see it?
Did you like Draft Day?
I like Jerry Maguire a lot. I like Draft Day a lot. I like Jerry Maguire better.
Kind of a black Jerry Maguire.
But before we started recording this today, Bill Bregoli said, it's just very, very talky. I mean, very talky, which he alluded to.
Jerry Maguire was talky?
Well, let me ask you this, Bill.
There's no Cuba Gooding running around saying, show me the money. It's not as flashy.
Jerry Maguire had a love story. Jerry Maguire had Cuba Gooding Jr. There's no love story. Jerry Maguire had Jay Moore, who was screwing him over at work. He had a mission statement. It had a great soundtrack.
All right, it's the world of Jerry Maguire, certainly. I don't know if it compares to Cameron Crowe.
The Draft Day movie that you're mentioning, which is also a great movie, really shows you in a 24-hour period, I believe it's 24 hours, the inner workings of that one day in football, and Kevin Costner has this whole plan.
I think this does that even better.
Yeah, I would say this has got that in...
It's a smarter movie.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So you would recommend it,
Bill Bregoli. Yeah, you've got to be smart to watch it and enjoy it, but you'll appreciate people will appreciate it. It's a grown-up movie.
I have no idea who his appointment was with at the end.
No.
When he walked into that room.
How was Kyle MacLachlan?
I was going to ask you about that. He's great.
Because he always plays a weird guy.
Yeah, he's a team owner. This is more of a character.
I like seeing Bill Duke at it, making the kids run in the gymnasium.
Yeah.
Run, just run.
Run till I'm tired.
Yeah.
He's a coach. It's cool. I recommend it. I don't know whether you're going to see it now. I'm very concerned that you're on the edge.
I think I'll take a look.
Okay, thank you.
Netflix, I wonder if they're making any money. I mean, seriously,
not so far.
They're spending so much money on series and on movies and talent. And
executive salaries.
And I mean, it's incredible.
And publicists.
You know, right. I mean, are they, is the model we'll just lose money? I mean, how are they even making money?
Volume. They make it up in volume. They just talk louder. No, they've got to greatly expand. I mean, they've got a big play, I think, pending in China. They're trying to get into all of these other. What I'm told is that it makes more money in Europe than it does here. They're not spending as much money on acquiring product over there, and they can dominate smaller markets, obviously, easier. The countries are smaller. That's Kevin Nealon's old joke. It's the only good joke he has about cross country skiing. Start with a small country. It's losing money now, I can tell you. They don't want you to think that. They tell us that all these junkets and everything that they're doing great, but it's not, it's burning through capital.
Well, how many people, you know, if one person in the family has the Netflix account, it's supposed to go to a movie where each person gets charged to go to the movie. If you have a family of four or five or even six, you know, they've got the Netflix account.
Well, we have 45 apartments in this building, and I've given everyone the code. So building, we're just paying for. So
and that's why they said 25 million people watched Bird Box. You know, they extrapolate.
Well, you know, I pay for a Netflix account, but I'm wondering, you know, how many people are just sharing passwords, college students and all that kind of stuff. It's like, here's my dad's password or, you know, I mean, out of... Let's say, how many subscribers do they have? You know,
I don't know. You know, millions.
I'm not sure they're. I don't know they're disclosing numbers.
Okay, well, let's just say whatever.
I know when I open it on my computer, it says who's watching, and everyone in my building has got a little emojicon. No, really? That's not true.
Well, what I'm saying is,
I don't think that many people are cheating for $9 a month. I really don't think it's. I wonder, probably 20%. I would guess they've got. Yeah.
You think 20% are using somebody else's password?
Yeah, probably.
And 80% are
yeah, I think so.
Like us, where we have the account.
Yeah.
20% is pretty significant, though. I mean, you know.
Hey, Siri. How many people watch Netflix illegally?
My web search turns something up for how many people watch Netflix illegally.
Thanks. Thanks, Siri. It says a lot, Noah.
But it's interesting that you changed the voice to a Brit on your Siri.
The Atlantic says 10 million people watch Netflix without paying. So 10 million.
10 million people. All right. Well,
that's a lot.
That's a lot of people. I don't know how this company makes money. I don't know if it's going to just go bust, you know.
So keep watching it while you can.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of things have just like gone away, which is like, that was good for a while, and you know, and then it just goes away.
It does turn out that they're rotating things on and off. You know, I was asking some of their officials what they were going to do when, you know, they run out of bandwidth, and some stuff does come and go on it.
It seems to me that almost everybody does have Netflix, though. It's rare where you run across somebody that's not a senior citizen that will tell you, you know, yeah, Netflix, it's on Netflix. I mean, most people are watching Netflix. It's a very convenient thing. I mean, we're in a world where just things are changing. I mean, you know,
in a world
Netflix
where everything's
changing the way that people watch movies. But, you know, they're spending so much money. I don't know how deep their pockets are. But look, if you look at Hulu or Amazon or even YouTube, which is, I believe, is now also producing original content. I mean, you know, they produce a couple of Hulu and Amazon produce a couple of series.
Okay, but those two examples are completely different because a Hulu is advertiser supported because they make you watch commercials, and that's probably happen unless you pay a premium, and that's probably going to happen to Netflix at some point. Netflix will say, if you want to watch our Roma, for example, you're going to have to watch a commercial before. That'll help. And Amazon doesn't give a shit. Amazon's making so much money selling my wife everything she buys every day that they can afford to lose money. They can have Amazon can have it as a loss
leader. But Amazon does not have the kind of original programming, the quantity of original shows and movies that
they have some.
Netflix has. Yeah, they have a handful of things, you know, but it's not like Netflix, which is, I mean, go on Netflix, look at their original series, look at their like made for Netflix movies. It's crazy. It's just crazy.
We talked about the funny Saturday Night Live commercial a couple of weeks ago where it just said, Netflix, we have everything ever made. And then it's because of that giant like ball of just millions and millions of shows.
And then I heard that...
Love that, by the way. We talked to Bill and I talked to the publicist at the Christmas party.
Well, I read that Woody Allen is suing Amazon because...
For 60 or 70 million bucks.
He had a four-picture deal with them, and he insulted them, and I read the whole thing where he said, you know, Amazon, who has no experience in the very novice in the movie industry, which is true, they are, but he wants...
Also, everything was known about Woody Allen before Amazon made that deal.
Right.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, you know, the Me Too movement came out, and, you know, but all the claims that were made against him, I agree with you, were known way 20 some odd years ago. No new information has come to light.
And this is not a popular opinion, but a lot of that is bullshit, I think. I really think that a disgruntled mom coached her kid into, I'm not in the majority of that feeling, but everything I've read, this is the one incident in Woody Allen's whole life where he did this, what every psychologist calls a pattern, a repeat, and the offenses are mount up instead of this one kid who came forward, and the other kid says, no, that was all made up. And I just feel terrible for Woody Allen. Whether he did it or not, I feel bad for him, but I don't think he did it.
Well, he is suing Amazon, and he wants his movie released, the movie that he made.
Timothy Chalamet is in that movie?
That is correct. And
Rainy Day in New York, I think it's called.
So is Selena Gomez. And... nobody wants to work with him. They said that, you know, they're all giving away the money that they made on that movie, which is not a lot of money when you do a Woody Allen movie. Apparently, it's for the possible awards and being working with Woody Allen. So
hey, people still work with Roman Polanski. They have to go to Europe to do it. I don't know what's happening in terms of this movement.
Will Woody Allen make another movie again?
I don't think he needs to.
Yeah. can retire. He's done.
Well, I think he wants to.
I'm sure he does, and he should be able to. But if there's nobody willing to underwrite it, he's never used his own money that I'm aware of. He's always been using other people's money. I guess he could do that. He could self-finance.
Well, he is old. I mean, how old is he? You know,
he's up there,
83, I think. Yeah. And he maybe he and Louis C.K. could do something together.
Yeah. Well, Louis C.K. was actually in the last Woody Allen movie that was released, which was Wonder Wheel. Louis C.K. was in that movie, so they obviously know
and Blue other. Jasmine.
Was Louis in Blue Jasmine?
He was the boyfriend.
Yeah.
Is that what you were thinking?
I was thinking Blue Jasmine. I'm sorry, he was not. He was not in Wonder Wheel. I was thinking Blue Jasmine.
Yeah.
I stand corrected. It was not the last Woody Allen movie that.
Technically, you're sitting, but that's
right,
fine.
Right. So next week, when there is more to talk about, as opposed to this week when there is very little opening up and very little things coming out, a few things coming out, we will have our Oscar prediction show, which is our annual Oscar prediction show. And we have distinct opinions. And Bill Bregoli.
Speaking of Netflix, they have a shot with Roma, so we'll see.
They're spending a lot of money on Roma.
I know. Roma pillow on your...
we'll talk about this next week, but the first indication of whether that's going to win anything, I believe, is when Best Foreign Picture comes up. If Cold War, as I hope it does, wins, then Roma has won Best Picture.
Roma won a BAFTA.
We'll talk about it next week.
But I think there's a nice Cold War push right now. But anyway, well,
how many people
I'll go
are
into
really
a,
watching
I'll,
Roma, though?
I'll give you a long technical explanation after talking to, and I will continue to talk to voters this week.
Yes, you gave this...
I will give you the whole reason about why Green Book's going to win.
Right, which is also on our show, and I understand that. But how many people are really watching Roma? I mean, most people have Netflix. How many people are really sitting down to watch a black and white foreign film?
My guess, like the Vincent Van Gogh movie that stars Willem Dafoe, they'll get 10 or 15 minutes into it and give up. Because really, there isn't much of a story there. I said this isn't a movie. It's a home video camera that runs for 2 hours and 15 minutes.
The Willem Dafoe movie, which is called...
At Eternity's Gate.
At Eternity's Gate, which sort of looks like a Van Gogh painting, the way it was shot.
That's the cool thing about it. But if it won a cinematography award, we wouldn't know until after the commercial. We'll talk about all of that and who should have hosted and where we'll be on Oscar night. I have a fun party I go to, and these guys will be at home. But we'll talk about where we're going to be Oscar night.
That's what we'll do. So for Bill Bregoli and Bill McCuddy and me, Neil Rosen, what do we do every week, Bill?
Well, we usually watch more movies than we did this week,
but we watch
the bad movies so you don't have to.
Well, there you go. Well, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.